If you're like me, you may have spent some time working on the lawn and or garden this weekend. I have a pretty small yard and a very small garden, but even so, it can seem a little overwhelming.
Our next guest has a little more on his plate this spring. He's working on 20 acres of land with over 20 different styles of garden and 4,000 varieties of plants.
Mark Dwyer joins us now. He's director of horticulture at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. He's here to tell us about the gardens and maybe share some advice for our more modest efforts at home. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, you gave me a tour, Mark, of the gardens back in late October. I imagine things look a little different now that it's April. Paint us a picture of what's going on.
No, absolutely. Well, in Janesville, of course, with some recent heat and kind of a warm spell 4 to 5 weeks ago, spring has really sprung here, so to speak, at the gardens with a lot of color, a lot of emerging leaves. Some of our earliest flowers and bulbs are blooming. So the explosion in color over the last 3 weeks on the southern end of the state has been unbelievable. And it's a matter of feeling like you're ahead of the game a couple weeks ago and now feeling like we're a little bit behind, just trying to keep up.
Now, the Rotary Gardens are a big highlight in Rock County. Can you tell us just a bit about the history of the gardens?
You bet. You know, the gardens themselves are situated on 20 acres of City of Janesville land. We are a private nonprofit. We don't receive any city funding. But the intent of the gardens, these 20 acres, when they were founded over 27 years ago, was to provide horticultural education and appreciation for everyone. So the 20 acres includes 26 distinct garden styles, over the 4,000 types of plants, and we do a lot of great educational events as well. So the gardens themselves are meant for people to enjoy, to be inspired, to learn, and certainly bring their families and enjoy just sort of a respite of color and imagination, because this we do see about 100,000 visitors a year, and we always hope to see more people.
You mentioned feeling like you're playing catch-up now. I feel that way on my lawn, but again, you're working on a lot more. Can you talk about the work that goes into gardens this size when it comes to the staff and volunteer labor that goes into it?
Sure. Well, you know, at Rotary Botanical Gardens, we're, I think, unique, not so much in that we utilize volunteers, but to the extent in which we do so. For instance, today I had about 20 volunteers this morning working on mulching and composting, some early season planting, doing a lot of wonderful things out in the gardens. And, you know, to keep up with that, we actually have a very small ground staff. What we've been able to do is augment our efforts throughout the organization with volunteerism. So our volunteers contribute about 17,000 hours a year, and that's over 400 people, and it's just amazing what we're getting done.
Now, someone like me, I'd worry about volunteering, you know, oh, I pulled this thing, it's not a weed, oh, it's the plant you actually wanted, but it sounds like there are a lot of jobs that are Rob-proof, if we can put it that way.
Well, we sure hope so. We'd love to have you here, Rob. You know, the gardens themselves, for instance, not an hour ago, I gave a tour for a new volunteer who his interest was in learning plants and being involved, contributing back to the community and dedicating time here. So we take all interest levels, and a lot of our best gardening help aren't necessarily true gardeners. They're interested in helping mulch and gravel paths. So it's learning what people want to do, what they're interested in learning, and accommodating, you know, tailoring the task to our volunteers. And that includes education and working in our gift shop and special events. So it runs the gamut of opportunity.
And you mentioned 26 different styles of gardens. What are some of the things people will see there?
Well, the gardens themselves are about 50% formal gardens. For instance, an Italian formal garden, very linear in its form, a French formal garden with a lot of roses but a lot of symmetry, and then more informal areas like a Japanese garden. We have a prairie area, a shade garden. So those 26 distinct garden themes represent not only perhaps different types of plants, but those garden styles as well. So it really is a sequence of rooms and experiences throughout the 20 acres.
And do you do specialty things from year to year where it's a one-time-only exhibit?
Well, I think we're real unique in that about 40% of the gardens is entirely different each year. So we'll pick seasonal themes. We do a lot of annuals, those plants that we transition every year to have color themes. Our big color theme this year is a Gothic theme, so dark reds and blacks with a little bit of silver. And that color scheme has changed every year. But we have a hummingbird haven, an heirloom garden. So again, 40% of the gardens is different. So we want repeat visitors to say, you know, I wonder what they're doing this year.
Talking to Mark Dwyer, Director of Horticulture at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville, as we're in spring planting season here. And Mark, let's talk about some advice for people who maybe are working with a little less than 20 acres on their own gardens. Let's start really small, container gardens. What kind of advice do you have people getting started on that?
Well, container gardens, you know, first of all, know your climate, and I would advocate for any type of gardening this time of year, regardless of where you are in the state. There is still potential frost, so don't jump the gun with any tender plants at this point in time. But getting back to containers, it's real important to understand you garden not only in the container with what you select, but with the container, with its appropriate placement. You want to make sure you have adequate drainage in those containers and a good soil mix that's well drained. So the science of container gardening, the plants are the last part of the equation. The other ingredients are the soil, again, and proper preparation. So really know what you're getting into and then have fun with the plants that are appropriate for the site and, again, that container.
Right. Say we've got shady things going on. That I assume that rules out veggies in our container garden for the most part.
It really does. There's very few vegetables that will withstand any great degree of shade, but you're not limited with color. There's so many great opportunities for a shady garden like begonias and caladiums and some other great plants that will offer color and interest. But again, most of the herbs and vegetables, you would focus on a full sun situation.
And are there vegetables that do particularly well in containers?
You know, there are many, and I think it's important to realize when you have container vegetables, certainly select varieties that might be more expensive at the store. The idea is the cost savings, but certainly growing vegetables at home is a great way of getting fresh produce and the joy of growing. There's a lot of compact forms of what we consider standard vegetables, like tomatoes and eggplants, smaller basils, smaller statured herbs. So the container soil volume will dictate a lot of what you can plant in it, but I would encourage people to look for smaller, more compact forms of vegetables that are still productive, and also shorter vine-length vegetables, meaning squashes and zucchinis and pumpkins that don't encompass a lot of square footage, but can actually be grown productively in a small, a decent-sized container, I should say.
You mentioned timing to watch out for that frost, and we've got, of course, people listening from Janesville on up to Superior and lakes and inland. What's the most reliable resource to say, okay, we're going to put up the go sign now, it's time to start planting stuff?
Right, and you know, what we consider an average spring or season nowadays changes so much, but the USDA and their zone mapping gives a pretty accurate representation of what we would consider last frost. So, you know, for us in Janesville, the potential for our last frost is between May 10th and May 15th, but we've had it later than that. And the unfortunate thing in our portion of the state is when it gets real warm towards the end of April, as we're seeing now, there are a tendency to think, boy, we're in the clear, so let's go buy those tomatoes. Let's go get those impatiens. And you can really get in some trouble if you have those out in the ground already, because it just takes a dip into the 30s, and we could have some damage on those plants.
Now, one type of plant that seems to do really well for me, even before the frost, is every kind of weed imaginable. What kind of prep can we be doing to get the weeds out of the way? We can be doing a lot of work even before we're getting stuff in the ground.
Sure. Well, you know, it depends on how people feel about chemicals, because there are pre-emergent chemical controls for eliminating some of the early germinating weeds. However, the window is passed for us in this area because things are already coming up quickly. We do a lot of manual removal. And so we're out there already collecting weeds and disposing of them, but we also will focus on some significant mulching. So there's areas where we're adding shredded wood chips, shredded leaves. There's areas where we're trying to augment the soil, protect soil moisture, and also hopefully eliminate a large weed crop, which we'll continue to see through the season.
Now, you work, as you mentioned, with over 4,000 species of plants there at the gardens. Are there plants, do you think, wow, these do really well in Wisconsin? Why don't more people have these in their yards and gardens?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? I think I start leaning towards the talk on natives in that regard, because when you think of native plantings, and that could be some of our grasses, many of the perennials we might find in our natural areas, they lend themselves to our soils, to our climate, to the types of conditions they're growing in natively. The trick in a home landscape is to replicate those conditions. But what we're finding is some of our stalwart, hardy natives are outperforming a lot of the more exotic plants that might be a little trickier. So, you know, again, it's a matter of knowing the plant and fitting it to the correct space. But keep in mind, you know, plants have a reverse expectation of you. You want it to perform, but you have to provide the appropriate conditions for it to do well.
Yeah, why do you think we don't do more with natives? Are they not as flashy as some of the plants we like to plant?
I think that's exactly it. I think there's a lot of promotion for some of our non-natives or the exotics, which certainly have a role in the garden. But the native plants, you may not, again, have that flashy alluded to, but what's coming out now are what are called nativars, and that's cultivated, you know, selected varieties of native plants. For instance, like a little bluestem, which is a great native grass. There's some great selections or nativars of those that are have an increased blue coloration or a better fall color. So I think you'll see in the next decade or so a push for these excellent natives and some of the selections of those natives.
Suppose we want some good bugs around. You mentioned, the bird family. There's hummingbirds, but also people are thinking butterflies or bees of various sorts. What kind of things can we think of there?
Well, I think it's important when you consider attracting pollinators to the garden, and it's unfortunate that when we have visitors here that get upset about seeing bees, and their concern, of course, is about being stung, but we try to point out that the pollination that's occurring out there is extremely important. But picking pollinator-appropriate plants, those that are heavy in nectar and pollen, that'll provide, food for these critters. You know, we have this hummingbird haven this year with plants for specifically hummingbirds, but the importance of providing a chemical-free environment, water sources, appropriate to have water available, but also, again, a segue of blooms of interest throughout the entire season for pollinators from right now all the way through hard frost, and, you know, again, a wide range of plantings to attract the widest range possible. So there's a lot of literature out there and appropriate pollinator-friendly landscapes, and it really starts with, a good plant palette and avoiding those chemicals.
We'll leave it there for now. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Mark Dwyer, Director of Horticulture at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville.